that's the problem. We're forgetting what it's like to hold somebody's hand and care for that human being, aside from what group of patients they belong to and what kind of research field they fit into.
Life is all about relationships. Lovers, family, body, or money. How satisfied you are can be completely explained by how you relate to things around you. This is Sophie Jaffe, and together with my husband, Dr. Adi Jaffe, we are here to explore and teach you how to maximize your relationships and achieve a happier life. Let's get ignited.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Ignited Relationships Podcast. I'm Adi Jaffe.
And I'm Sophie Jaffe.
And we have a special guest with us here today, and it's you, so.
It's true. I have not popped in here for several months, and I'm so happy to be back. I'm so happy to sit beside you, Adi, and really just share a little bit of where I've been over the last few months. This is not a super long you and I solo podcast episode, but I definitely want to just say hi to all of you. I've missed you. It was really nice to interview our guest today and really just nice to connect on the podcast with you, Adi, and feel this energy again. I really want to just share with all of you how profound this experience has been, taking space, even though I love so many aspects of what I do. Really, the lesson in taking this time off from the podcast has been that I don't have to quit something. And just because I love it doesn't mean that I have to overdo it or not take care of myself and my self-care. And the minute that I begin to move on the spectrum to a place of feeling burnt out or frustrated or overwhelmed or not being as present to something, that doesn't mean that that thing is bad. It doesn't mean that I don't love podcasting, for example, but it means that I need to take some space and redirect my energy and figure out what the right fit is for me in this space.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Maddie and I were joking the other day, the last definitely couple of months of doing the podcast before you took a break was a struggle. It was every time we would have to go and record, because it's a lot of work. You got to do the interviews and you got to study up on the guests, and then you got to do the pre-interview, and then you got to record the ads. And you know, what ends up being for you guys listening 45 minutes or an hour could take us 3 hours to actually get done.
Totally.
And, you know, Maddie and I would always know that things would have to fall exactly right for it to be good, or you were really stressed out and anxious whenever we go to do it. And then it would give this kind of energy in the house in general, like, oh, we got to make Sophie come do this again. And that's when we knew you needed a break.
Yeah. And I think even more than the time that it took, which was a lot, it was the energy. And because I bring such a presence and you do too, if you and I were not in sync and had like the right amount of time outdoors that day and moved our bodies and we fed ourselves well and nurtured ourselves and we didn't have too much chaos, like to have a D and I sit still for that many hours and feel super present and happy and content, that's really vital. I think that's a really big part to it because of who we are in the world and how radically transparent we are. So it brings this other element of, you know, presence that is so beautiful, but that felt a lot like pressure to me. And if I was feeling a little off, I felt like all of you knew it and that I was a fraud in some way, or that I felt bad for our guest or something like that. So again, it was my own pressure I put on myself. But, you know, just sharing that like there's so much more energetically that we put into this that meets the eye.
We're also different people, right? Like I thrive on doing the same thing and showing up in the same way week after week. Actually, technically, you guys, I've shared about my personal care regimen day after day. That's what gets me going and what keeps me stable. You can't stand doing the same thing.
No.
Probably for like 2 weeks in a row would drive you insane.
Yeah, no, I can't stick to anything. I can't stick to anything, and I don't want to. It goes against the grain of who I am. I can do, you know, 2 days probably of the same routine 2 days in a row, and then I'm over it. Like, it's just not.
Like, I've been waking up at 5:30 and working out. Since right before COVID started, maybe right after because the timing changed, but something around a year and a half. I don't know that you've done the same thing. Well, and again, I don't do it on the weekends. When you go on vacation, I don't do it. So there's interruptions. But when we're home, 90% of the time I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know that since I've known you for 17 years, there's been something that you did every day at the same time for a year and a half.
Yeah, and I think that the times in my life in my early 20s, that when I was exploring who I was and trying to figure out who I was in this world and who adult Sophie was going to be when I wasn't told what to do. Not that I ever really was told what to do, but love you, Mom and Dad. But, you know, I think truly when I was trying to figure out who I was, I did that all the time. Like, I would go on a 14-day cleanse or detox when I was 21 and try my darndest to take those droppers or take that, you know, detox pill every single day at the same time. I just don't thrive. It makes me feel like I'm in a box. It makes me feel like I'm not connected to the present moment. It makes me feel generic. And that's my own being and my own. And so because I know that about myself now, it allows me to show up every day and really follow the joy and really follow my heartbeat instead of some generic, you know, outline of the way my day should look and the way it should be.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it was definitely, I'll call it a challenge. It took some planning to figure out how to exit you because before it was so regular for 3 years, we pretty much recorded every single week. We released one of these episodes, and it took some planning, and it took really me trying to figure out, well, am I also going to just take breaks? Am I going to keep going? And as obviously some of you know, at least, we kept releasing Monday and Friday episodes because I can do those on my own, and that felt good. But, you know, I think more than anything, this is an example. We get this a lot from couples who listen to the radical transparency piece. They listen to the stuff we've been through. They like the idea of really honestly expressing yourself to your partner and then taking in what they were saying and expressing how you feel and then reacting. They like the sound of that. What they don't realize is that means you have to listen to your partner and be honest about what you're experiencing and then make a plan and potentially change things in your life based on those adjustments, right? And so,
and that can feel scary. Like, that change can feel really scary. And, you know, I thought about this change specifically for a while and I didn't know how to execute. And I felt afraid, like, what will it mean for the podcast? What will it mean for our listeners? Will they go away? No. The truth is you follow us because you love us. The truth is you love the content that we share and the guests that we bring on, and you love ADNI for the way that we speak and show up in the world. Therefore, if we release an episode randomly, like we are right now together, you guys will show up and listen and connect because you're here for us. And so I think that that's really reassuring and made me feel less afraid.
To be honest, it just goes beyond that for me, and it is, we started the podcast to share intimate conversations that we were having. And, you know, 3 years and 140 or 150 or so episodes, I really should have looked at the number exactly beforehand for the Wednesdays. We did definitely over 120, 130 episodes together pretty religiously week after week. That's a lot of intimate conversations. And since that was the purpose on the front end, anything after that, when you started feeling like it wasn't serving you, like it was going against who you are, like it was, I mean, it was causing us to fight every week. Yeah. Every week we were fighting because of this.
And I want to share a little bit more about what he's talking about. So when we first started the podcast, we really wanted to share our story of, you know, it's literally our story. That's the name of the podcast recording. And it was all about the cheating that we went through on both sides of the relationship and some perceived sex addiction and the way we navigated that betrayal, the way we navigated our marriage, the way we navigated having children, the way we had radical transparency evolve through that process. And for me personally, I was done with, you know, after 4 years of sharing from that perspective, I was done with her. That version of who I was finished with. And I had evolved way past being that person. Yet I had kind of put myself in this positioning where I was sharing so openly and vulnerably that I was then attracting that sort of energy in my life and those sort of clients and couples in our life. And that's wonderful. But I needed some space from that version of who we were and who I was in that storytelling, what we were focusing on, what we were not focusing on, to light me up in a different way so that I could feel authentic in who I am and the way that I share on this podcast. And I think that that was really important for me to take the space, because I didn't know who I was anymore if I wasn't that victim. I didn't know who I was anymore if I wasn't this woman who went through these terrible things. And because I'm not her anymore. I'm not hurt anymore. I trust you fully. I want to be this version of who I am. So I needed there to be space and time to figure that out.
Yeah. And again, I think once again, that's a place where Sophie and I differ, right? I've made my life, my career, the work I do every single day. So whether we talk about it on the podcast, or whether I'm leading my groups on Tuesday, or whether I'm recording content for other podcasts or whatever it is I'm doing, there are elements to my past and addiction in particular and mental health that I talk about regularly. And here's the thing in the end. I mean, we talk about this all the time, right? Change is the only constant. That's going to happen in your relationship too. Who you were when you met your partner, if you stay with them long enough, is not going to be who you are 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later. There will be remnants. There will be themes. There will be connecting strings that are part of those personalities throughout. But you're going to grow and you're going to evolve and you're going to learn. You're going to be different. And if we, as a partner, try to hold each other to who we were, now we've known each other 17, 18 years. Mm-hmm. Like, if I try to still make you the 20-year-old that I met when I first met you, then you're going to feel caged and you're going to feel separated. So even though this was weird and uncomfortable and it took us a couple of months to figure out how to even do this, it worked out great. Mm-hmm. And, Maddie and I were joking. Maddie's my assistant, my right-hand person, the human because of which Ignited can't exist. So shout out to Maddie. It was actually a little easier to record podcasts because whenever we need to get a guest, whenever we need to do something, it was only my schedule. Sophie's schedule is insane. My schedule is insane. Getting the two of us together was crazy. So it was really fun to sit back down and do one of these. But it's really funny actually, when we first sat and we were trying to talk about it, I had a little of the anxiety that used to build up for me for months around us sitting down and doing these together, because there were months, at least 2 months that I remember, maybe even a little bit longer, where there was a lot of anxiety around us recording together because the schedules weren't working out.
Yeah, it wasn't about the schedule. My heart wasn't in it. And the reason, and it's not that I don't love doing the podcast, let me be very clear. It's that I needed time and space to figure out who I was, separate from that old identity. I needed, to someone else, they might not need that time and space. They might be able to embody that new version of them. But because I had been stuck in a story that I wrote for huge magazines, that people were coming, I get hundreds of messages a month about this story that I shared publicly about a D&I and what it feels like to be married to a sex addict and all of these really big things. And I'm not that version anymore. And you're not that version. And our marriage is so different that I needed time and space away from it in order to really embody this new version. And we had some really crazy times in the last 12 weeks or so where I really got to embody that new version separate from that story of who she was. And now I feel confident. And now I know that that is a distant, it's a story that matters, but it's not who I am anymore.
Yeah, it's a story that matters because other people are still in that same place and they get to learn from our history. And yes, you figure that out. But before you figured it out, what it felt like was we were still doing it. We hadn't had the conversation about you ending. And so we'd be like, it'd be like 9:30. The kids would go to sleep, and then we'd have to come down and sit down and record. And I'm an early riser, as I mentioned before. And I go to sleep pretty early, like by 10:30, I'm in bed. And it was a huge undertaking. So I'm really excited. Sophie's going to drop in periodically now. We're going to find guests and people that keep us excited. And
yeah, when I feel that zap of ignited energy, I'm going to come running back and I'm going to book a fun guest. And feel free to send me any direct messages or send requests. We're getting some to our email now of guests that want to come on. We would love, if there's someone who is in our life and that we're inspired by. Please let us know if you have any questions about anything. We are here. Remember, you can leave reviews on anywhere that really that you listen to podcasts, but especially Apple. And we will send you a special care package if we read your review on air. So make sure you leave a review for us. Give us a 5-star review if that's what you mean and that's what feels right. We would appreciate it. And, you know, I think the bigger thing here is the lesson of, you know, what we do and how we survive when the winds of life shift. And how do we get through challenging times? Like, really big picture, for me, the sharing of this is not about the podcast. It's not about the details of all the things we shared earlier. It's the bigger picture for all of us. How do we get through challenging times? How do we step away from what isn't serving us in the highest? Maybe we've outgrown something, a version of who we are or a job, whatever. And how do we listen and honor that intuitive whisper within us to change the narrative of our story and connect it in a different way? And instead of that letting us, you know, lead with us, instead of leading with that story or that version of who we are, how do we let it be expansive energy for our clients, for our friends, instead of stuck in the gunk of it all? And that's really where I'm at. And it's funny, as soon as I started to embody this is, I'm realizing this right now. The minute I embodied this new version of who I am, I started attracting. I have like 8 or 9 clients right now I'm working with in an intimate way. They all came flooding in within like a 2-week period. And I'm having so much fun with that. But you know what I'm doing with them? I am helping them embody an empowered version of themselves through really difficult things with their partners and helping them to see that they're not a victim to their story. They're not a victim to what happened with them. And it didn't happen to them. It's happening for them. And I wouldn't be able to give that advice and help them so clearly if I didn't do the work myself.
Well, I'm personally really glad, Soph, that you got to have that growth experience and that felt expansive to you. And I'm glad to have you back on the podcast. We are back today for Pride Week with Dr. Cecily Havert. She's a physician. We talk quite a bit about our medical community and medical service and Eastern, Western medicine and holistic medicine. Sophie shares a lot from your childhood, growing up in a holistic nurse practitioner household. And Dr. Havert really specializes in women's health, specifically around LGBTQ issues. So we talk quite a bit about that as well.
I really loved that she combines mental health with physical health. It's imperative. It's so important. It's vital. And I hope that more doctors and more practitioners can move in that direction of combining that importance of mental health with physical.
Yeah, absolutely. So see you on the other side. Enjoy this interview and happy Pride Month.
We love you. From the moment I wake up till the instant I go to sleep, as most of you know, my day is crazy full. I often share my schedules on good old Instagram, but for those of you who don't know, I am running 3 inspiring businesses. I have 3 gorgeous children running around the house constantly. And in between helping them with school, creating alone time with a D, and also carving out some solo soul time for myself, there is basically no room left in the day for anything else. I really do know how it feels when I load up on unhealthy foods, and it's not a great look. I don't have time to stress about these added fillers or sugars or whether my food will actually make me and my family feel good and be nutritious. And that's what I love about Philosophy Superfoods and why I started this company. I know that they are trustworthy, that they are packed with high-vibe antioxidants, minerals, adaptogens that all help me deal with what the world throws at me each day. I love my life. I love my children and my jobs, and I want to be able to really thrive in all of these things and put on a bunch of different hats and roll with the punches. And Philosophy Superfoods really allows me and supports me in wearing all those hats. If you would like to stock up on our Philosophy Superfoods, which are always organic, raw, incredibly sourced nutrients, use the code IGNITED, that's IGNTD, to stock up for you and your loved ones. You and your body will feel so grateful for it.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the conversation part of today's podcast. We've got Cecily Havert with us. Dr. Havert, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank Pleasure. You. Thank you for tuning in with us. So many different things we want to talk about. And, you know, what I love about conversations that we get to have with physicians in particular is I feel like the entire field of medicine is changing. I actually come from a medical family. My dad was a physician. My sister is an OBGYN. And so I've gotten to see over the last 30 years or so, the field really change. And in innumerable ways, I'm sure. And I'd love to hear more about it from your standpoint in particular. But I feel like when I was born, it was very much a white man's game. Enough from Israel.
Yeah, and just kind of, you know, and kind of a paternalistic feel, right? Like, you know, this is what I say, this is what you should do. Not a whole lot of shared decision making going on. And so I definitely agree with you. There's been an evolution.
It's so true. Even the structure, right? And so it was, physicians were really lauded. They were looked up to. It was one of the most respected fields ever. But it was one of those things also where people were just not questioned. Doctor said so, you did the thing. And I definitely grew up in one of those households, both in terms of my dad and his authority, but also in terms of the reverence for medicine, and also very Western, also very science forward with no real input from, you know, the rest of the communal knowledge of the world. And I feel like generally in the world, that's falling apart gradually in many, many organizations, but especially in medicine. I want to hear what it sounds like or what it feels like from the inside as somebody who is in that field and developing, growing, and, you know, becoming a standout on their own.
Yeah, you know, there certainly is, you know, an evolution that I've seen. I've been in practice now for, I guess, coming on about 20 years. And so when I was training, it felt, you know, it feels different when you're training anyway, but I've definitely been able to see an evolution. What I've seen as being really important as something that really describes good care and needs to be part of it is the mental health piece. And I feel that that wasn't always included, you know, many, many years ago. And so there's more of this integration and just sort of looking at the person, you know, as a whole, not just a physical being with cells that get sick, but also how the mind, you know, comes into play with everything, how that plays in with our health. And so that, you know, so there's, and then that opens up possibilities for maybe more non-traditional types of medicine, you know, meditation, different forms of, you know, Eastern, you know, practices that really help heal the mind. Yeah. And so I've seen, at least in my practice, I've tried to be open to, you know, bringing in as much of this as possible. But it's certainly been something that's been changing.
So if you grew up, I mean, your mom being a nurse practitioner, but very informed by those sorts of ways of working.
My mom specifically is a holistic nurse practitioner.
Okay.
Family holistic nurse practitioner. So I grew up, I also watched her go through nursing school and, you know, doing little surgeries on weird things she'd bring home on the back porch and like all the traditional ways. But then also she would treat us herself with homeopathic medicines. That was her first go. If we were feeling sick or under the weather, that was the first thing. And then because it was holistic, she really did look at the whole picture and would absolutely get us an antibiotics if we needed it, would absolutely go to Western meds. And that balanced approach really allowed me to mother in the way I mother and also view, I think it was a really great, you know, she probably didn't know what she was doing relating to motherhood specifically, but she's made me the mother I am because of that effect and that, that awareness being in, like living in my bones. Like I grew up, she would bring vaccines home and give them to us in our kitchen, you know, and it was very balanced, but she wasn't pushy about it. She was just like, you know, come see my friend Sally for your pap smear. Like we're, you know, obviously I'm not going to do that for you, but come see Sally. And then she saw all my friends from high school and they all felt really comfortable with her and she had a great rapport and a great trust with them. And just that exposure, even though it was a little quote weird at the time and different, and it made me who I am today in terms of this appreciation of holistic care.
Yeah, I think there, you know, there should be a marriage between the two, the allopathic and, you know, maybe the more integrative. And I think that the best medicine and the best outcomes and satisfaction potentially also comes from the marriage of those two. And so, you know, I'm trained in traditional allopathic medicine, but I know that there are so many other areas where people can benefit. And so I've made an effort to really get to know the naturopathic doctors in the area, the other holistic practitioners in the area. And I really try to bring my knowledge and their knowledge together. And if there can be a collaboration between the two, kind of what you were explaining with your mom and some of her other colleagues, I think that's where, you know, that's the sweet spot.
Yep. It's where the magic happens.
That's well, right.
I think it rests even on the notion, you know, let's say thousands of people listening to this right now, millions of people in the US, billions of people in the world, different backgrounds, different experiences, different unique combinations that make them themselves. And yet the old mentality in some way was, yeah, but there's a right answer, right? There's there's the correct way to treat this specific condition, almost superfluous to who the person experiencing the condition is. And I think what we're realizing is that that's almost never true, right? And if we could, you've talked about mental health, so I'd love to kind of take it there, right? I mean, my sister just got this beautiful letter from one of her patients talking about how, you know, there are a lot of doctors and some doctors are really knowledgeable and that's amazing. And then there's some doctors that make it easier to talk to and some doctors that make you feel like they really care about you. And what she was getting into on a, like a full page typed out letter gradually was, because you made me comfortable and because I felt like I could trust you and because I wasn't scared when I would walk into your office, the feeling you gave me being in your office was one completely different than that of one I've had with any other doctor. And, you know, you can talk about it as simply as bedside manner, but this idea that at our core, it's the stress and the fear and the anxiety that make us sick anyway. And yet the systems of care that we created oftentimes create more stress and more anxiety and more fear, right? I mean, I think the US is one of the worst countries when it comes to this period, like the coldest, most calculated, most expensive and therefore anxiety provoking and stressful type of care. And we talk about it as if it doesn't mean anything. And yet we're one of the sickest countries and you know, our mortality is suffering because of it. And we forget the mental health component. I think we keep trying to find the bacteria or the virus or the pathogen that is causing it. And we're forgetting that sometimes the dehumanization of care is the pathogen. That's the problem. We're forgetting what it's like to hold somebody's hand and care for that human being aside from what group of patients they belong to and what kind of research field they fit into.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that their medicine feels very corporate, or it's starting to feel more corporate, you know, with more hospital systems and businesses getting involved and trying to direct how medicine should go, telling doctors how productive they should be. You know, I could go into, you know, a lot of my opinions on all that, but no, I agree. I think it's sort of getting, and it's also burning out doctors, right? I mean, how can you, you know, a lot of doctors will go into this, you know, a lot of people will go into this field, you know, because they have sort of a, you know, an almost like an overzealous or an altruistic need to help people, right? And then you get into a system that doesn't necessarily foster that. And it's, you know, you've got this, you know, there's a lot of conflict there, and then there's burnout. But but I, also what you were saying about sort of bedside manner, you know, when a patient comes into a doctor's office or goes to the hospital, goes to the ER, what I always try to remember is that patient is, you know, extremely vulnerable. They're putting themselves in your hands. I mean, that is an extremely vulnerable position to be in. And especially if it's somebody you don't know, you know, the first time you meet a patient. And so, you know, developing that trust and developing, you know, letting that patient feel at ease that they can speak is so important. And just keeping in mind that, you know, this might be one of the hardest days of their lives or whatever that they're going through, and try to understand that and meet them there.
I love
be passionate about that.
I love that you mentioned that, you know, at Ignited, I would say the vast majority of people who listen because of our mental health addiction recovery conversation and because of our coupleship conversations, both of which originate from pain, trauma, discomfort, and struggle, right? And I remind our staff, who's amazing, and I remind us as we talk to people constantly, that the only reason somebody's reaching out to us is they're having a terrible time in life.
Yep.
Terrible, right? There's not a single time that somebody picks up the phone or emails us and they're just kind of having a pretty damn good day and they just wanted to see what they could do about their drinking. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Something terrible just happened. Or if they reach out because of their relationship, it's because somebody just cheated or there was a big trauma or a big breach of trust. And that's the place where we meet them. And we have to honor that and recognize it. And it takes a toll, I mean, on the caregiver to some extent. Mm-hmm. But then that's our job, right? That's not something that we were supposed to take out on the patients, users, clients, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we're talking about mental health, if you don't mind, I'd like to shift to mental health struggles, trauma, addictions, and things of that nature.
Sure.
You know, this is Pride Month. And one of the things I see a lot in our user base at Ignited and the people that I talk to regularly is deep-seated trauma, negative self-talk, PTSD,
shame.
Yeah, I'm all right. Our whole F shame motto here that oftentimes originated when they were children, I mean, maybe preteen, at a time when there was no route to express that. I'm thinking of an example right now of a guy, I'll call him D because I don't want to release his name or anything, but you know, the guy grew up in Texas in the 70s, knew he was gay from elementary school on, but look, I've never lived in Texas. I've known Texans for a while. I'm pretty sure it was illegal to be, I'm kidding, but it was illegal to be gay in Texas in the 70s.
There weren't that many supportive.
It was not allowed. You were not
exactly
allowed.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
found at some point that if he drank enough, he could pretend to be like everybody else and he could fool around with girls or dance with them or do whatever he needed to do to pass as one of the guys and play the sports.
Yeah.
And by the time I met him in his mid 40s, he was a daily blackout drinker and he had learned. And he was out and gay.
Sorry.
And he was out and gay, but deep trauma and deep wounding. And one of the major things he needed more than anything else is just acceptance. It's just.
Yeah. The acceptance. I mean, just not being able to be who you are. I mean, that in itself is trauma, right? And if you start with that as a child, you know, that's hard to shed. And, you know, you were mentioning, you know, just, you know, about the drinking and everything. And, you know, that just goes along with coping mechanisms, right? Maladaptive coping mechanisms, which a lot of times is what alcohol use, substance abuse is all about, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're treating an underlying mental health disorder frequently.
So true. I mean, Sophia, I think when you talk to people oftentimes about what we do at Ignited, the way you present it is they don't treat the alcohol problem. They treat what's under it.
Oh, yeah. You can't have good recovery unless you really dive deep and find out what's actually driving that.
Right.
That
it's generally not about the thing, whether it's drugs, alcohol, gambling, sex,
food,
whatever it might be. It's like to separate. I work with a lot of women who are going through cheating with their partners or just found out their husbands are living double lives and all sorts of things. So I kind of support them in that process of empowering them instead of, you know, it's really hard when someone is acting out in that way sexually, even if it's not physical, because it's hard to not make it about you. Like if this man had an eating disorder, it's easier to separate yourself from it. Or if even if they're drinking alcohol, as long as they're not affecting
you're
you in a negative way.
Versus a sex or intimacy disorder?
Yeah. Like the women that I work with have, you know, this deep tie to like, what does it mean about me for what they're doing and they're acting out? When really, if you would replace that acting out with women, men, whoever it might be, with food, gambling, some other addiction, you wouldn't take it personally. Right. And so,
well, it's a violation of their relationship, right?
It's a violation of trust, but beyond that part, I think it's more, it's yes, that you have to renew the trust and it's a violation of an agreement and all of that. But once you get past that, then there's a layer of like, well, maybe I'm not good enough, pretty enough, tall enough,
brown enough, black enough. What did I do, right? Yeah. Well, how did I result? Well, there's the blame part and
So I try and skip over that because I'm like, has nothing to do with you. You did everything from your end that you could have possibly done and you were authentically yourself as long as we figure out that they really were. And instead staying curious about their partner and why they do the things they do and the habits that they do instead of making it about them and taking it personally. And like, for me, I just want to help people. I feel like I wasted a lot of time being the victim and Adi was the perpetrator because we have some cheating and lies and betrayal in our past. And like, there were so many years where I just like obsessed over these women that he had these experiences with. And I made it like, I really just wanted to understand like what she had that I didn't. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about me.
No,
and so those wasted hours and days and weeks and months of my life being like, I'm not good enough. I'm not this enough. It wasn't about me. So I love to help people like speed up that recovery from their end, like keep your side of the street clean, but also just stay curious.
So Cecily, what do you do? I mean, people come to you primarily, I assume, for the physical disorder, right? You're a physician. So they come for that. And yet you're so aware of the mental health components and obviously of the shame and the, how do you bridge the two and essentially align their mental health needs with the ailments that it may be bringing about?
You know, it can be really tricky. I'm a primary care doctor, so I do wellness visits, but I also do sick visits. So people come to me with complaints. So, you know, for example, a sick visit, you know, somebody will come to you with a complaint. And, you know, what I try to do is try to approach it completely with an open mind. And obviously my job is to make sure that this person does not have a dire situation, which requires higher levels of care. So, you know, so I go through my mind, you know, this is how we work through this. But sometimes as we go through the process, you start to realize that maybe there's a mental health component. There's a feeling, maybe the symptoms don't always line up, or maybe somebody comes in, we call it a positive review of systems, right? Somebody comes in and everything, you ask them, do you have headaches? Yes. Do you have abdominal pain? Yes. Do you have muscle aches and pain? Yes. Do you have, you know, this? And so with this positive review of systems, sometimes my, you know, my little spidey sense will say, you know, maybe there is something else going on here. So
everything is so activated.
Because everything is so activated. And, you know, there could be other things. And so it's, you know, I do have to walk this line between physically what types of conditions, diseases could this be? And a lot of what I do is ruling things out. So I help the patient go through the process of ruling things out. A lot of what helps them is just reassurance that the palpitations they're having is not a heart attack, or, you know, the headache they're having is not a brain tumor. And so I can usually, you know, diffuse that fear relatively quickly. But then what, you know, especially if those complaints continue, and maybe we don't have a good answer. So it's not the brain tumor and it's not your heart attack, but you know what, it's still happening. And then you have to start to dig a little bit deeper. And that's usually when, you know, we start to explore, well, how, you know, from a mental health standpoint, where are you? How's your sleep? That's one of the, you know, a good kind of starting off question, because that tells you a lot about where you are, right? If somebody's not sleeping, well, why aren't you sleeping?
Yeah.
Well, I wake up all the time, or I can't fall asleep. Well, why is that? And then you can kind of start to, you know, but one thing I do find is that, you know, a lot of times people will get a little defensive if you start to, you know, say, oh, you know, maybe it's your anxiety. This is what's going on, you know, and say, well, it's not in my head. You know, they get very, very defensive, whether it's the stigma or whatever it is, whatever that barrier is. Oh. But, you know, and I try to validate. I said, you know what? I don't believe that your headaches or your abdominal pain or any of that is in your head. However, we do also have to recognize how our mind and our body interplay with one another. And our mind can turn symptoms up in our body when you know, that, you know, if we're not listening to what's going on in our mind, if we're ignoring our anxiety, then our abdominal pain has to start and say, well, maybe you'll listen to me. Maybe you'll listen to some abdominal pain, and then sort of backtracking and seeing. But it's a process. I mean, sometimes I'm seeing patients sometimes for months as we work sort of backwards.
It's so interesting because it sounds like the work is literally almost coming at it from the opposite angles when I see people, right?
Yeah.
They come in and they know there's a struggle. And sometimes it's very physical in nature, like whether it's genetic or epigenetic risks or
other sort of
ticks,
like,
or
like one of the things I learned pretty early in my clinical experience was this whole connection between gastric bypass and stomach stapling and alcohol problems. And so sometimes it is a very physically natured thing. There's a biological change in the human, and it causes a complete change in sensitivity to alcohol. But it takes a while to get there sometimes, and we start in the mental. And I love you, you said it so well. And it's so sad to me, because when you know, when you understand this deeply, the connection between the physical experience and the emotional and cognitive experience is, I mean, they're tethered. They're almost, they're one and the same in a real way.
They are, I think it's such a relief when somebody, when I see somebody in my schedule that says anxiety, I'm like, oh, they've come to that conclusion.
They already know.
Right? Yeah. They already know. I'm like, oh my goodness. Okay. A lot of my work is done here. But you know, in terms of coming to it, it's the people that come in with the somatic complaints that I find are the most challenging, but it's a process. And I find that as we go through that process, there's a lot of trust building that happens. And so finally, when we get to the point where we really have to start talking about mental health, and sometimes, you know, they may not know, there may be lots of walls up for lots of different reasons, previous trauma, whatever. I mean, you know, trauma lives in the body, and sometimes we just don't even, you know, realize this. So
you mentioned, and you talked about, and I know this is an area that you work in, intimate partner violence, right? I mean, you want to talk about something people don't want to talk about. And so if you have a story around this yourself, and so I think it might be worthwhile you're mentioning, you know, a lot of times people come in with stress, anxiety, sleep issues, life seems completely out of control, and it takes forever to identify that there's something.
Because sometimes it does, yeah.
Terribly wrong. And
yeah.
And what I didn't learn this until I met Sophie, to be perfect. I had known women who had been in unhealthy, maybe even somewhat abusive relationships, but it wasn't until I met you, Soph, that I realized the gap that can exist between what you think somebody who's in an abusive relationship looks like, feels like, sounds like, talks like, and the reality, which is anybody you meet at any given point in time could be hiding that kind of abuse. And we're coming out of COVID, and I know that was a really terrible time for some people in those relationships. So I'd love to maybe dig into that a little more.
Yeah, you know, I mean, part of, you know, what we do also, when I mentioned that, you know, I'm a primary care doctor, but wellness exams, and what I feel is really important at these exams is screening for these disorders. You know, sometimes if you don't talk about it, if you don't bring it up, people may not bring it up. And so I feel that it's my job as a doctor to ask these questions. If you don't ask, you may not hear. So that's one, you know, one thing. And so just asking about safety. And so sometimes you're surprised with the types of answers that you get. I mean, you know, asking questions just, you know, not only, and abuse comes in all different forms, right? It's not just physical abuse, but it can also be emotional abuse. So are you insulted? You know, does somebody insult you on a regular basis? Are you, you know, so are you screamed at? And so, you know, just trying to get kind of peel away and, you know, see what people are willing to talk about. But that's,
well, and also I feel like a lot of people aren't aware of most of this stuff, just like they're not aware that they might have a problem, or they might not be aware that they have anxiety. I think oftentimes, like, I have friends that are so conscious and aware and very mindful, and, you know, one of my girlfriends was having panic attacks, and she was like, oh, maybe it's the coffee, maybe it's the, and it wasn't, it was her partner that she shouldn't have been with. And her body knew that he was the wrong partner for her. Now, he wasn't abusing her. It wasn't some big overt thing, but she was experiencing so much anxiety that she was getting panic attacks. So her body was creating this thing, and she's very aware. She meditates, she does yoga, she's mindful, all those things. And yet it took her breaking up with him to realize, oh, the panic attacks are gone. Even the most aware people just might not, like, I consider myself to be a very intuitive, conscious human and person and woman. And I stayed with an abusive man for 5 years, and the dynamic was very abusive, both emotionally, psychologically, and then physically. And I stayed because in my mind, I made up these reasons that it made sense to stay. And so if I can do that, you know, and I can convince myself and everyone around me, my entire community, my family, all my best friends, everyone thought it was roses for the most part, unless it was a big blow up fight, which they were exposed to, and they would just call it on the alcohol or call it on a bad day, you know, that was the norm for us, was really just like this dysfunction. And I just swept it under the rug and just kept on going and made up reasons why it was okay for me. So yeah, I can only imagine the type of, you know, the people that come in and just have no awareness over it.
Yeah. And, you know, it does sometimes, it's a process, and sometimes you don't always identify it right away, but there's once you get to know somebody pretty well, and like I said, you know, you develop that trust,
yeah,
you do start to get inklings of it. And especially if it seems like there's a lot of anxiety or sleep disorders or, you know, something, or, you know, sometimes you just start to get a sense, and then you start to ask more questions.
Exactly.
And then, you know, and then, yeah, but it's a process. It's definitely a process.
That is the beauty of having someone that you work with consistently. Yeah. Like, neither of us have doctors that we work with consistently. Like, I kind of feel like even growing up the way I did, I never had a consistent doctor. I just saw my mom and occasionally her friends, but it was something outside of her wheelhouse. But I never really grew up having that consistency, and I can really see the value in seeing someone regularly to connect with on that level.
Yeah. 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 You know, I'd like to think of myself as an advocate and, you know, and also a project manager for a lot of my patients, because I do a lot of coordination of care, and I do interact with a lot of the mental health professionals. So there's a, you know, a constant flow of information. Amazing. And, you know, so, you know, and it's great because I can, you know, I help on the, you know, the physical side, but then I've got the mental health side that, you know, that I collaborate with. And so it's really a nice process. And I think it's very helpful for people.
I love bring the focus. I know that a lot of the work, whether it's in advocacy, policy, and things of that nature that you do focus on the role of women. And again, especially it being Pride Month, I'd love to hear a little bit about, first of all, how you got to that direction in your work, because that's not necessarily where medical school takes you in terms of the work you'll be doing for the rest of your life. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, sometimes you don't always plan to go the direction that you want. I mean, a lot of it is just the experiences and the people you meet along the way. So it's just, I think, and also it's where you feel that there's a need. And I found that with working with the LGBTQ community, that there was a lot of suffering and the mental health issues. And, there's a higher prevalence of that. And I felt, well, what can I do to help make this, an affirming and safe process? That's what I strive to do for all my patients, you know, knowing that they're coming to me in a vulnerable state and giving them that safety that they need in order to achieve their best self. So I just felt that I was dealing with a lot more, and I'm sure you've talked about this in your program before, just with addiction, mental health, you know, there's a lot of more alcoholism that you see in the LGBTQ community. You know, there's a lot more partner violence. I think we talked a little bit about partner violence, but they're especially with, it's interesting with in bisexual women, it seems like there's a very, very high prevalence of that in comparison to heterosexual women. So it's really interesting. And
can you go into that a little bit more deeply? When you're saying among bisexual women, are you talking about in male-male relationships, in male-female relationships, or in their female-female relationships? Like, I'd love to inform people. I mean, again, right, like, awareness is so key here, because as Sophie mentioned, until you know what to even look for, it may be right in front of you and you're not seeing it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's both. You know, it's interesting. I mean, frequently they're reporting, especially if there is, rape or forced sexual relations. Most of the time it's with men forcing their way with women. However, it can happen, you know, in bisexual relationships and even in lesbian relationships. I mean, it can be, you know, women perpetrators as well. So it's, you know, but for whatever reason, you know, we just see, partner violence being a little bit higher in the LGBTQ community, along with, you know, higher levels of anxiety and depression and substance abuse. And one thinks it's probably a lot of this has to do with, even in their youth, just feeling, you know, feeling accepted, finding their place in society, feeling good about themselves, valuing themselves as a person. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, just a lot of different layers that happen, and a lot of trauma that happens. Exactly. Also.
Yeah.
And especially in LGBTQ youth, and that it ripples out.
One of my closest friends in high school, who we all knew was gay. She was a woman. She was gay. She wasn't trans. She was she ended up having a sex change later, but at the time she was identified as a gay woman, and we all knew it, but her family was very Roman Catholic, and she came out to her mom and was immediately kicked out of the house for months. And you know, she had all of our houses to sleep at, and so she didn't go homeless or anything like that. But I remember even back then thinking to myself, holy shit, like, just, we all accepted her just de facto because she was that, we all knew and we understood it. But it became clear to me that the level, and that was not abuse, right? It was just rejection. And so when you're talking about trauma, I'm imagining the deep, deep, you know, violence, and therefore the reciprocation and the mirroring of violence later on, rejection, fear, deep layers of shame for
blaming yourself for destroying the family, or just being yourself, right,
and you didn't do anything wrong, you're just being yourself.
Well, I mean, that's a source of huge trauma, especially if you do not have the support of your family. And a lot of, LGBTQ youth and adults, they lose their families over this. And that's devastating. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, thankfully your friend was able to, you know, find places to stay, but homelessness, a huge number of homeless youth are in the LGBTQ community. And a lot of it's just being kicked out of their homes or not feeling like that they're even safe there.
So there was that story. I should have researched the names just so I could have it here, but you know, and there was that child, he was, elementary school age, but he was beaten to death by a stepfather for displaying he was cross-dressing and he was displaying these sort of gay characteristics. And I just have to imagine, because even if you don't experience it yourself, you still get aligned with these other members of this group, because you do get stereotyped, you do get stigmatized, you get shamed. And you know, we just, obviously there was deep awareness about racial inequality and the role of race in violence in this country. And I have to imagine that not far behind it is this LGBTQ conversation, right? It's no wonder when you take a group of people that's been so ostracized and stigmatized and shamed for years, and at the same time lauded and celebrated, it's kind of an insane thing, right? Like, a lot of performers may be, maybe gay, and they're accepted as long as they're that. But it's a very convoluted sort of bizarre conversation that it must be hard to see. And then to know that you could be the victim, even if you hadn't been to date, that you could be the victim of this sort of discrimination now as an adult, being totally out, totally okay, because somebody has deep hatred, fear, or, you know, stigma against you for belonging to that group.
Yeah, I mean, you feel like you've always got to be watching your back, right? You don't know who's going to be accepting and who's not. And, you know, in a lot of, you know, in recovery also, in recovery situations, treating the LGBTQ community, sometimes you even need specialized programs, just because in order to come to true recovery, you've got to kind of lean into your vulnerability. And it's really hard. If you are living like you are always got to be defending yourself, you can't let your guard down. I mean, that's tough. And so, you know, sometimes you even need specialized programs or programs that understand that and offer a little bit more support in that area.
And maybe directly address those earlier life issues without the fear that somebody's going to make fun of you around the corner because, oh, you know, we don't talk about those sorts of issues.
But you know, a lot of what I try to do in my practice also is just to be, you know, to try to show that this is a safe and affirming place and ask the questions. You know, I mean, don't assume that everybody's heterosexual, and, you know, don't assume that, you know, everybody needs contraception, you know, and within their relationships and everything, and just, you know, try to just ask the right questions, a lot of, and also with the trans community, I mean, there's a lot of you know, mental health surrounding that and violence surrounding that too, victims of violence. So it's just, you know, making sure that the, you know, that you're asking, you know, what is your sex, what was the sex assigned at birth, but, you know, what is your gender currently and what are your preferred pronouns, and just, you know, showing that you have that openness, it says a lot. And then I feel that the relationship that I have with my patients is, you know, is better just because that level of trust is already there. Mm.
What can we do? I want to hear more about how you take care of yourself in this line of, you know, as practitioners and healers and all the things, it's so important to take care of yourself. So we're going to ask you 5 questions at the end in a moment. But how can we do, like, what can we do this month? It's Pride Month. It's all about awareness. We were very active during mental health awareness last month. Obviously, the goal is to every month bring more consciousness and awareness and support to these topics. But especially this month, what can our listeners do, like, right now today to take even, like, one small step to help?
I think, you know, that's a great question. You know, I guess reading and learning and just trying to understand the experiences, I guess, of the LGBTQ community, you know, because we can say we're allies and, hey, we're behind you. But until you sort of understand what is still wrong with our society and the problems that we're still working with and admitting that, you know, sometimes you're part of the problem. You know, if you aren't trying to fix the problem, then you're not necessarily, you know, part of the solution. Reach out to, you know, somebody in the community and ask them, what are your experiences? Where have you felt that you were discriminated against? Where have you really, really struggled?
I think one of the things that I learned deeply from the racial conversation in the last year and a half was that component, right? Just sitting on the sidelines doesn't make you an ally, right?
There are
people, and I was writing this as you were talking, there are people who constantly refer to back to the good old days. And I hear this in conversation all the time, man, you know, I miss the good old days when you didn't have to worry about pronouns. We didn't have to worry about being politically correct about how you talk about race or people of different ethnicities. And I keep reminding them, I go, those were the good old days for one group of people, we're clear.
White men.
They were the good old days for white, like upper middle class or middle class and above men, not even white poor men.
Right.
Those were the only people for whom that was, and Christian, by the way. So white, Christian, middle class and above men were the only people who consider that time in history the good old times.
Yeah.
Everybody else was walking on eggshells in deep pain, worried, being completely ignored, by the way, and feeling like they had no role, will never have a role, are completely disempowered, and in fear for their lives sometimes. So I think, as you mentioned, because I hear this now about pronouns all the time, like, oh, shit, why do I have to fucking mention pronouns? And it's like, you know what? Because you make assumptions about people all the time based on the reality you've lived in. But those people that you are kind of upset at for bringing this notion of pronouns up are essentially just saying to you, hey, not everything is what you believe it to be. And unless you get to figure out how to have a conversation with me so you can understand my reality, we're going to keep living in two different worlds. And so I just want to remind people as we're listening, these times of change, they do cause friction and conflict. Yeah. I get it.
It's not supposed to be comfortable to evolve.
It's not supposed to be comfortable. It's not supposed to be easy. But I mean, that's actually where, you know, that's where we grow.
And it's the most natural thing that humans, that living creatures have, is the only constant is this evolution and change. Yeah. And so it kind of leaning into the discomfort, making mistakes. Mm-hmm. I know during BLM, those several months, I made so many mistakes, but I was out there. I was quite literally out there. We live in a primarily Black neighborhood. And like, I was throwing myself into it, even though I made a lot of mistakes. And the same thing goes with this. I've really been trying to listen to a lot this month, just because podcasts are easier for me than reading, just given my life. But it's just about learning and growing. And I think that's what you're saying is just like, just whatever you can do to learn, and same as you, Adi, just evolving, even though it's uncomfortable, and getting past this idea that like, this is not a temporary thing. We are evolving. Yeah. We are moving past this idea of there being two genders, a man and a woman, and they only have sex with the opposites. No, this is very, we're evolving past that, which is so beautiful. And all change is welcomed and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. Yep.
Okay. So we're going to ask you our 5 questions.
Ooh. Okay. All right. Here we go.
Just first thing that comes to mind, what is the best advice that you've ever received?
The best advice that I've ever received. You know, okay. I am someone who overthinks everything. So I have to kind of like
anything.
Anything.
It could be from a, you know, patient.
Some of the best advice that I ever received was changing the nature of the practice. I used to be in one of those practices where you see 22 patients a day and you feel like you're part of a machine. And some advice that I got was, you don't need to do this. You should also practice self-care, and the care that you give, the care that you give yourself will also be reflected in the level of care that you give your patients. So there, and I made a big change, and I practice a completely different style of medicine, and it's so much more rewarding. So, someone who sort of helped nudge me that direction, that's probably some pretty good advice, at least for my career and my mental health.
Yeah, I actually have to acknowledge just that I feel an ease in your presence, as opposed to some doctors that I've met that have an agitation because they are cut their, you know, their time is cut short and they are, you know, up against the clock. And with you, it does feel, I can tell that you do give that gift of self-care to yourself. So we'll get to that question.
Okay. I jumped ahead.
No, it's all good. What has been one of your proudest moments to date in life?
It's funny. The first thing that jumped to my head is something to do with, you know, just my kids. I think one of the proudest moments is, seeing my kids, advocate for themselves, but also advocate for others. I love it that my kids really try to stick up for the little guy. And I've seen that that happen before where, both my boys will, you know, kind of rush to the kid that's crying or, not accepted and really try to bring them into the fold. And that just brings me so much joy because I feel like, well, I hope maybe I had something to do with that too, but I love that. And just, you know, bringing the next generation of compassion and wellness into the world.
100% resonates on so many levels. What about your hardest moment?
Hardest moment. I mean, lots of hard moments, lots of bumps in the road. One of the hardest moments in my life was a couple of years ago when my 12-year-old suffering from pretty severe anxiety and depression had to be taken into a residential program. Like it was a partial hospitalization program ultimately for self-harm. And so as a parent, that's tough, right? Because you want to be able to protect your kids and, but it was, you know, we've all learned a lot from that. And I think also when you go through these really hard times, it builds resilience.
Yeah.
And so, even though this is a really, really hard time, I feel that the person I've become, and especially the person that my son has become is, as leaps and bounds where he was. So it's a hard moment, but it's interesting. That might be, evolved into one of my proudest moments also.
Yeah. That's how I feel about all the traumatic things in my life, specifically in our relationship. I feel like the traumatic hardest moments are what have given us the gift of where we are now. So
You have to recognize it at that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about your self-care rituals? How do you take care of yourself?
Self-care. Exercise is probably something that I really, really enjoy. I feel that is probably one of the least used anti-anxiety and antidepressant, sources out there. So I like to be active, but I also really, really like to connect with people. Honestly, it's funny because I'm an introverted person, but I feel that the connections that I make with people are so, so important. And, that's part of what I do. I try to get enough sleep. this isn't always the greatest. You know, I don't always achieve that. But
what's enough sleep for you?
Enough sleep for me is probably about 7 hours.
Got it.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I'll get 5, sometimes I'll get 9, but yeah. So sleep is pretty good, but I always say I want to meditate more, and I always tell my patients to meditate, and you know, that's not something that I've been able to work into my regimen, but it's a goal I'd like to do more of.
Hmm. Yeah. I think our daily self-care practices are always a work in progress. You know, mm-hmm. you always find new things that you can do. Mm-hmm. Our podcast is called Ignited, right here on this hat. Mm-hmm. What gets you ignited in life?
I think being, you know, I think the empathy and that I have for my patients, and ultimately how that turns into compassion, because compassion is sort of the action part of empathy. Mm. That makes me really, really happy. The fact that I can be that for my patients, the fact that I can help them in one of their most difficult moments. And that doesn't get just go with my patients. That goes with my friends. That goes with my family. That goes with my partner. I just being able to offer that is enough to really bring me joy.
Hmm. I love it. That's beautiful.
Something all of us can strive for. More of it.
Cecily, thank you so much for joining us here today and sharing your work and your wisdom. I love seeing the change in medicine. I hope that, like the evolution of humanity here, it becomes more and more inclusive and allows more practitioners to find their place, their niche in this holistic world. So thank you for doing the work you're doing. Thank you for being one of those people who left the traditional way of practicing and showing people that there's another way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yay.
All right, everybody. As usual, subscribe, take some screenshots, let us know what resonated from this. Have an amazing, amazing rest of your week.